Parshas Yisro. Famous Rashi right at the beginning of this week's Parsha on the opening words Vayishma Yisro Kaye Midyon Kose Moshe Iskolasha Osa Lekim Moshe Yisrael Amoy. Yisro heard about all of the events that had unfolded, as a result of which he joined Klal Yisro. So Rashi, the famous Rashi that we all know, Rashi says the following: Ma Shmua Shoma Ubo. What did he hear that made him come? As Rashi says, Kriyas Yamsuf Umulchanas Amolek. Kriyas Yamsuf Umulchanas Amolek. Now, there is a very famous question on this Rashi, and maybe we can add a less famous question. The question that needs to be asked is, if we were to be asked, of the two Nisim, Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amolek, which is the bigger of the two miracles? So for sure we would say Kriyas Yamsuf, undoubtedly. I mean, we say these psukim every day in davening, all the world, everybody saw it, everybody heard it, all the water in the world split, the psukim that we recite every day, Shomu Amin Yirgozun, Chil Ochaz Yeshe Peloshes, Shle Kenan, everybody, the whole world knew about this Nis. And the truth is, not just because it was a more famous Nis, but L'Eira, it is indeed more an open miracle to split the sea than to be victorious over Amalek. As miraculous as that was, but L'Eira, even if it wasn't less famous, they were successful in war. Baruch Hashem, they were zecher to siyata d'shmaya. So undoubtedly it was a miracle. But surely not a greater miracle than Kriyas Yamsuf. So if Yisro, for whatever reason, did not join forces after Kriyas Yamsuf, so how did Milchemes Amalek all of a sudden clinch it? Mashmua Shoma Ubo, what made him come? Kriyas Yamsuf, is that enough? No. Milchemes Amalek, now he joined. What suddenly happened at Milchemes Amalek that made him join, which until that point, for some reason, he didn't come and join Klal Yisro? That's a famous question that the Mefarshim discuss. But maybe we can add another question, and this question might actually give us a clue as to what the answer is to the first question. There's a little diuk to be made in Rashi. Which Nisim made Yisro come to Klal Yisro? Kriyas Yamsuf Umilchemes Amalek. Is that how we would have written it? It was the war against Amalek, or was it the victory over Amalek? The Chayre Rashi should have said it was the Kriyas Yamsuf, that was one miracle, and the Nitzachon, the victory over Amalek. That was the miracle. The war wasn't the miracle. The fact that we were victorious over Amalek, that's what triggered Yisro to join Klal Yisro, and yet Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi, by the way, is quoting a Chazal. So Mechilta, so Gemara in Zvachim. So what does it mean, Milchemes Amalek? So maybe that already gives us a clue that it wasn't the victory over Amalek. It's certainly true. The victory over Amalek, as miraculous as that was, could not be compared to the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. So apparently it wasn't the miracle that made him join, it was the Milchama that made him join. So why should that be? So I'd like to share with you a couple of approaches to understand, first and foremost, why did he need the two Nisim, both Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek? Why was it that only then he joined Klal Yisro? So I saw this year in the Maharal. Maharal in his Pirush on Chumash in the Gur Aryeh, and he writes as follows. He says, the truth of the matter is, we really need to ask ourselves a more fundamental question, which is, long before Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek, there were all the makkas in Mitzrayim. Those weren't good enough. 10 makkas? Those apparently didn't get Yisro to join Klal Yisro. But only when Kriyas Yamsuf, only then, that apparently clinched it. Why? So the Maharal, Kedarka Bakodesh, explains in a very profound way, and he says as follows. All the Nisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed in Mitzrayim, as he writes, were Nisim Protim. Nisim Protim. What does that mean, a Nis Proti? Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, overcame Mitzrayim. wasn't on an international scale. He overcame Mitzrayim. That's why, when the Makkas were being performed, do you remember what the Chatzulim told Paroi? They said, Etzba Elohim. This is a finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A finger. Why do they call it a finger? The answer is because a finger is just a prat. It's part of the overall hand, but it's not the whole hand. So the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has managed to be shalit over Mitzrayim, that's the finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Maharal, we have to understand, what was the world view of the Mitzrayim at the time? They viewed that there are, as it were, different forces in the world. There's this Avodah Zarah, and this Avodah Zarah, and the other Avodah Zarah, and all different forces. So by overcoming Mitzrayim, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu achieve in doing? A nes protis, this individual force, and that individual force HaKadosh Baruch Hu managed to overcome. When it came to Milchemes Amalek, for example, and also Kriyas Yamsuf, there's something very different happened. Kriyas Yamsuf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu overcame the Koyach of Mayim. And as we mentioned before, which particular Mayim split? All of the Mayim in the world. That's not a Nes Proti anymore. That's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrating his ability to overcome a particular body of water. All the water in the world split. As Chazal tell us, you could be sitting in your swimming pool thousands of miles away and that split as well. So too, says the Maharal, when it came to the Milchemes Amalek, as the Torah writes at the end of last week's parasha, it says, Ad Boy HaShomesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped the sun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped the sun. Who does the sun shine for? Again, the whole world. In fact, the Shemesh is the Melech. As we say every Shabbos and Davening, who is the Moishel? Shemesh is the Moishel over the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by stopping the sun, overcoming that koyach of the Shemesh, and overcoming the koyach of the Mayim, those were different types of nisim. That wasn't a nes proti. That was a nes kloli. That was an altogether different league. Says the Maharal, what did it say when HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the Yam Suf? Vayar Yisrael es, what did they see this time? Es hayad antenna. Now they saw the whole hand. Mitzrayim only saw Etzba Elohim, a finger. But once you saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was overcoming all of nature with regard to Mayim, that's the Yad HaGadolah. The Yad HaGadolah. So the question asked the Maharal, fine. So we understand why those Nisim were superior, as it were, to all the Esemakos. But why did it need two? Why did you need both Milchemes Amalek and also Kriyas Yamsuf? So he says, because Yisroi wanted to see and believe, as we say every day in Davening, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sole dominion over Bashomayim Mima'al Va'al Ha'oretz Mitachas. Both over the heavenly forces and over the worldly forces. Kriyas Yamsuf represented which type of miracle? The miracle in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated his koyach over Ha'oretz Mitochas, the Yam, the Kriyas Yamsuf, that's the water. When it came to Milchemes Amalek and he stopped the Shemesh, then I see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the boss there too as well. Two different miracles, not in kind. They were both Nisim Klolim. But one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated his koyach in the Shomayim and also in the Oretz. So therefore he explains, that's why it was only after the two miracles that Yisroi joined. We asked before, if he never joined after Kriyas Yamsuf, so why did he join Klal Yisroel after Milchemes Amalek? That surely wasn't a greater nes. The answer is, it wasn't greater. But it was there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed that he's superior not only to the koiches of Oretz, but also to the koiches of Shomayim. Now I see, says Yisroi, that what? What was the pasuk that Yisroi himself said? He joins Klal Yisrael, and he hears about everything, and he says, "Ah, now I really see Atzo Yodati Ki Godol Hashem Mikol Ho'elokim. Now I see that Kadosh Baruch Hu is greater than any other force. Why? What's proven it? Kriyas Yamsuf, Oretz, Mochemes Amolek, Shemesh, that's the Shemaim. So Kadosh Baruch Hu has demonstrated his absolute superiority over his Koyach, Bashamayim, Uba Oretz, that's when Yisroel joined forces." So that answers our first question. But if you think about it, it L'chayra also answers our second question. What was our second question? Why does it say in Rashi that he joined because it was Milchemes Amalek? Why didn't it say it was a victory over Amalek? According to Maral, it's Gvaldik. It wasn't the victory that made him come. It was the way that the war was waged. How was this war waged? By HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopping the sun. So it was the Muhammad. It wasn't the fact that we beat the Amalek and we were superior to them in the battlefield. It was the way that this milchama was waged, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopping the sun, that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed his superiority, not only Aretz Mitochas, but also Hashemayim Mimal. Now the Maral there in conclusion adds one line. There is, in fact, a third opinion. Rashi brings Kriyas Yamsuf, Melchemes Amalek. If you look in the Gemara, there's a third opinion. Some say, you know what made him join Klal Yisrael? Matan Torah. Without getting involved now, and it's a whole discussion, why did Rashi omit that? But the Maral continues the theme. And he says, it's true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shoylet over the Oretz. Kriyas Yamsuf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shoylet over the Shomayim by stopping the sun, that's Mohammed Samalek. But there is something that transcends Oretz and Shomayim. What is that? Torah. Torah is Ruchni. After what? It's Machlokes in the Gemara. That's Machlokes in the Gemara. At which point did Yisroel join Klal Yisroel? So according to the Pesukim, it seems to be that he joined long before Matan Torah. There's Machlokes in the Gemara. Some say, Ein Muktam Amulchabat Torah, he actually joined long after Matan Torah. So at least according to that opinion, says the Maral, these were the stages. First we saw Kriyas Yamsuf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Sholeit Ba'aretz. Then Milchemes Amalek, he stopped the sun in Shemayim. But then the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could deliver the Torah which transcends both Shemayim and also Aretz, then Yisroel now has the full picture. That's the full suit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Sholeit Ba'aretz, Ba'Shemayim. That which is above Oretz and Shemayim, and at that point he joins Klal Yisrael. So that is the perhaps hashkafic approach of the Maral to explain. So why did it take two miracles? One for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to illustrate his koyach over the Oretz, and one over the Shemayim. But there is an altogether different approach, a more Musa orientated approach. As we would expect from the Baalei Musa, I saw this in the writings of Rabbi Eliel Yapian, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. A most wonderful pshat and a very important pshat in this Rashi. Maybe by way of introduction, let's just remind ourselves of the Yesoid, which I think we've discussed many times in this forum. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the Mirei Rosh Hashiva in his Sefer Sichas Musa, asks the following question. We all know the story of Palti ben Laish. Who was Palti ben Laish? Palti ben Laish, in a whole complicated set of circumstances which we won't get involved in now, was given by Shaul HaMelech, Shaul's daughter's hand in marriage. There were very complicated. There's a complicated background in which Palti ben Laish was concerned that actually this daughter was in fact Mekudeshes to David HaMelech. So as far as Palti was concerned, she's an Eishes Ish. It's absolutely Osa to marry her. But he was, as it were, forced to do so by Shaul HaMelech. So what did he do? He was so determined, Chas v'Shalom, not to be over an Aveira, that he took a sword and he stabbed the sword in the ground in between the two beds. And he says, anybody, Palti ben Laish, anybody, kolo oistik b'dovol zeh, if you get involved in this, you'll be stabbed by the sword. Palti ben Laish. So, the obvious question that needs to be asked, and Chaim Shmulevitz asks this question, one second. This sword is supposed to act as a deterrent? That's what's going to prevent him being over in Avera? He was the one who put the sword there in the first place. As easily as he put it there, he could also take it out. There was no guard there standing with a revolver or with a sword. He was the one who put the sword there. So as easily as he put it in, if you put it in, you can also take it out. So how is that supposed to act as a deterrent that he shouldn't chas v'shalom be over an aveira? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz teaches us his famous yesod. And he says, quoting Chazal, Yesh koine oilomoi b'shor achas. Yesh koine oilomoi b'shor achas. Literally translated, there are those who can be koina, can conquer the world, acquire their world, b'shor achas, in an instant. As Rav Chaim Shmulevitz writes, everybody has these shor achas moments, these moments of inspiration. But it's only yesh that actually do anything about it, and akoina oilomo. Palti ben Laish has given this wife, and he is so charged up with emotion, thinking, what's going to be chas v'shalom, that he realized himself, I cannot rely on this initial inspiration, this initial emotion. Why? Because we all know the way things go. As inspired as a person can be, but that moment comes and the moment goes. So what's going to be tomorrow? And what's going to be next week? And what's going to be next month? So in order to preserve this charge of emotion, I have to convert it into a physical maisa. I have to concretize the inspiration, not just recall it. If I concretize it by putting a sword there, and every time I look at that sword, I'll be able to relive again that initial flash of inspiration. But if I don't do something positive, if I don't convert it into actions, and I just rely on how I once upon a time felt, then that will dissipate. And that will not be a deterrent. But if I convert it into an action, that's my koina olamai. He was zoicha to the shor achas, with this initial charge of emotion. I can't chas v'shalom be over an aveira. But he was koina olamai by making it into yesh, into something tangible. Where is the makor of this phrase, Yesh koina olamai b'shor achas? So we know the Gemara Avodah Zarah tells us. There was a story with Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya. And the Gemara tells us he was a Rosha Marusha, there wasn't a single Isha Zoyna that he wasn't even aware with. And the Gemara tells us in great detail how he went to every effort to be over the Avera, every Avera possible. That's the extent of his wickedness. On one particular occasion, on the verge of being over an Avera, he received a flash of inspiration, a piece of Musa that she told him. And it hit him in between the eyes. And all of a sudden he realized, I've got to put an end to this, and I've got to change my ways. So the Gemara says, he sat between two mountains, and he begged the mountains, could you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Rachamim? And they said, no. And he asked the Shomayim, can you help me? Can you ask for Rachamim? No. And he asked the sun, and he asked the moon, he asked the stars, he asked the mazolos, until eventually he uttered those famous words, and he said, I realize, Ein hadovar tolui elo bi. Ein hadovar tolui elo bi. I can't rely on anybody. Not the mountains, and not the valleys, and not the sun, and not the moon, and not the stars. It's all dependent on me. At that stage, Hiniach Roshay ben Birkov, he placed his head between his knees. V'go'ob b'b'chir, and he cried his heart out and his soul out, literally, until his neshama departed. At that moment, a heavenly voice emerges, a bas koel emerges, and it says, Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya is straight into Olam Haba. End of story. But not quite. Because Rebbe, the real Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Hanasi, heard about this and he says, Yesh koina oilomoi b'kamoshonim. But the Yesh koina oilomoi b'shor achas. And he says, this Elazar ben Dordaya, not only was he zeicha to be a ben Olam Abba, but he's zeicha to a very special title. What's he called? Rabbi Eliezer ben Dordaya. Why is he called Rabbi? What did he teach us? He was a Rosh Kol Yomov. He was Chozer B'tshuva. He had that flash of inspiration, and he did something about it. He was Chozer B'tshuva. He cried his heart out. What did he teach us? And the Mefarshim explained, that's exactly what he taught us. He didn't teach us the Koyach of Tshuva. We all knew a person could be Chozer B'tshuva. But he taught us what can happen when you have that Shor Achas, that you can be Koyna Olamoy, and you can turn your whole life around in an instant. That's his legacy. That is his eternal legacy. That is his teaching, and that's why he's called Rebbe. We all know the Mishnah at the end of Yuma. We sing the Mishnah at the end of Yuma. Omer Makiva, Ashreichem Yisrael Fnei Miata Metahirim. And what does the Mishnah say there? Ma mikvah metahir es hatmeim. Just as the mikvah purifies those who are impure, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu purifies Klal Yisrael. And this is a Mishnah at the end of Yuma. This is referring obviously to Yom Kippur. For some reason, Yom Kippur is compared to a mikvah. So the Ksav Sefer says in one of his drashas to Kol Nidre, he says, do you know what the comparison to a mikvah is? A person can touch every dead body in the world. And he can be tomei for 100 years. He goes through the purification process, but he's still tomei. Enters the mikvah, he exits in a flash, 100% tomei. He can overturn 100 years of being tuma, of being tomei, by dipping in the mikvah, which takes a shor achas. That's the koyach of Yom Kippur. Kvasik B'Yavar Averis all year long. But he's chosen the Tshuva Shleimah, he dips into the mikvah of Yom Kippur, Yesh Koyin Olam B'Shor Achas. That's the Ksav Sefer's teaching. Now listen to this. Who was the one who authored this Mishnah for us? Who's talking? Omar? Rabbi Akiva. Who is the prime example of this? Rabbi Akiva himself. As Chazal tell us, Rabbi Akiva was an Amoret till the age of 40. Everybody knows the story, but perhaps we don't know one important word in the Medrash. The Medrash, it's in Ovos Reb Nosson, says, Ben Arboim Shona Hoyo Veloy Shona Klum. He knew nothing, nothing at all. We all knew what happened. He saw the rock with a hole in it, and he stopped, and he said, one moment. If water can pierce the stone, certainly Torah can pierce his heart. And he went and learned. There's one word that we missed out. Do you know what the Medrash says? He made this Kal Vachomer Miyad Chozer L'Olmei Torah. That was Rabbi Akiva's success. Miyad. Rather than being inspired by this stone and thinking to himself, this is a wonderful lesson to me and I really must think about it. No, he acted on it. He converted it into something real. That's the sword in between the beds. Miyad. He didn't wait for the inspiration, chas v'shalom, just to evaporate. Rather, miyad, immediately, he changed his life round in an instant. So it's that very same Akiva, Reb Akiva, who authored the Mishnah, says you can do the same as well. You can dip in the mikvah and become tohen. You can be chozer b'tshuva, and you can become a tzaddik. Yesh klina olam b'shor achas. And guess what? What was his name? Akiva. How do you write Akiva? Ayin, kuf, yud, beis, aleph. Rosh HaTeves, yesh klina olam b'shor achas. That is the Rosh HaTeves of Akiva. That was Rabbi Akiva's whole legacy. He didn't just preach it. That's the way he lived his life. He is the embodiment of this whole principle. Yesh koin olam b'shor achas. In one moment, safe to say that thousands before him and after him also saw the same rock. If he saw it, why should they not see it as well? And what became of them? No idea. Nothing. We never heard of them. Because Rabbi Akiva was the one who made the Kal V'Chomer, umiyad chozer l'olmei Torah. He decided, I, like others, have been zoicha to this shor achas. But unlike others, I'm going to be the yesh kreim olamai. They were probably also inspired. Why should other people have not come to the same conclusion? If water pierces a rock, then Torah can pierce the heart. You could reach that inescapable conclusion. Yeah, but what do they do with it? The answer is nothing. So they remained whatever they remained. But Akiva, Rasha Tevis, Yesh, Kain, Elom, and Bashoa Achas, Miyad Chozer, Elom, Eteyah. Let's come back now to our Rashi. With that introduction, we understand the beauty and the depth of Rav Elia Lopian's Pshat in this Rashi. What was the question that we began with? Mash Muashoma Ubo, what made Yisroi join Klal Yisroel? The answer is Kriyas Yamsuf and Mochemes Amolek. So what did we say? Kriyas Yamsuf was a very big nace. In fact, it was much bigger than Mochemes Amolek. So why didn't you join first time round? You know what Belly Lopin says? Phenomenal pshat. Of course he was inspired after Kriyas Yamsuf. He was greatly inspired. Why wouldn't he be? The whole world was inspired. Everybody heard about it. Shomu Amin Yirdoz, and we say every day of our lives in davening, everybody, the whole world heard about it, everybody was inspired, including Amalek. How could you not be inspired? How could you not be moved? How could you not have had your eyes opened by Kriyas Yamsuf? And guess what happened? Before you know it, Amalek went to fight war, wage war against Klal Yisrael. Yisro said, at that point, now I realize what happens if you don't act upon inspiration. After Kriyas Yamsuf, he was very inspired, and he thought, Pseudah, I can live here in Midyon and happily be inspired. No! That's my Shor Achas! If I don't become a Yesh Kain Oilomoy, then I'll go the way of Amalek. So it was the fact that Kriyas Yamsuf could be followed up by Milchemes Amalek. That's what moved him to concretize his inspiration. Says Rashi, Mashmua Shoma Ubo. Not what he heard. I know what he heard. But what made him come? Do you know what made him come? The fact that Kriyas Yamsuf could be followed by Milchemes Amalek. How did Amalek have the audacity to wage war with Klal Yisrael? Weren't they inspired by Kriyas Yamsuf? Didn't they see the Ribbono Shel Olam? And the answer is, they were inspired. And what happened to their inspiration? It just dissipated and evaporated. And as quickly as it came, it disappeared. That shocked Yisroi into action. That's the genius pshat of the Lev Elior of Elia Lapian. It wasn't the miracle so much. It was the fact that you see what happens if you don't act upon inspiration. Therefore, after Kriyas Yamsuf, of course he was inspired. But he thought, I can wait, I can move, I can think, I maybe not, I have to discuss it. And then he saw Milchemes Amalek, he gave up. I see what happens if you don't make your move. Miyad, that's it. Yesh kain olam b'shoachas. Mashmua shoma ubo. So if we think about it, now we understand. We've answered our second question as well. What was our second question? Why does Rashi say Milchemes Amalek? Why didn't Rashi say the Nitzochin over Amalek? But according to Rabbi Lapin, it's Givaldic. It wasn't the victory that made him come. It was the fact that Amalek could wage war in the first place. That was the big awakening to Yisrael. I see, if you don't act upon the Shor Achas, the Shor Achas comes and the Shor Achas goes. Because surely Amalek were inspired. Forget the Nitzochin. That wasn't what made him come. It was the fact that there was a Muhammad in the first place that was his reminder. It's not good enough to be inspired. You have to act upon it. You have to take that sword and put it in between the beds. You have to be like Reb ben Doradiah, instantly be chozer b'tshuva. You have to climb into that mikveh. You have to be the yesh kain olam. You have to be like Reb Akiva, miyad chozer lo moiteira. Maybe just to finish off with a moshel and a story. I know I've said the moshel in the past, but it's important. It's a very important moshel. The moshel, I heard this from Ramatisiel Salomon, Shlitesh B'Zechet Tarichus Yomim and Rafula Shalema. When I was in Gates of Yeshiva, Ramatisiel was the Mashkiach there. Now he's in Lakewood. So he once spoke about this type of topic, about being inspired, and he said, you know, we all from time to time are inspired. We all, as Ruchaim Shulevitz writes, have our Shor Achasis. We hear a moving Dvar Torah, an inspiring drosha, maybe a song, a tefillah. We all have inspiring moments. But what do you do? What do we do with those moments? So he said, you know what happens? You know what we normally do about them? We tell people about them. Oh, I had an amazing shir. Oh, I had a beautiful song. Oh, I davened an amazing tefillah. And we talk and we talk and we talk, and then it just dissipates. So he said, Moshel l'moad avodayma. I can still hear his words ringing in my ears. And he said as follows. He said, Reuven lived in a little village, and he needed to make an important business trip up to the big town. Major business meeting, he can't afford to miss it, but he doesn't have a car. So how is he going to make it there? And he hears that Shimon, on that very day, would you believe it, is planning on driving from the little village exactly to the big town where he meets. He can't believe his luck. And he goes to Shimon, he says, do you think I can have a ride, please? Sure, no problem, my greatest of pleasures. You're going on that day, exactly on that day. Brilliant, perfect. What time are you going? He says, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what time I'm going. So what I'll do is as follows. I'll drive down your street. I'll park my car outside your house. And I'll honk my horn, and I'm waiting 1 minute. Because I'm not sure when I'm going, but whenever I go, I need to go. I can't hang about. He can't believe his luck, this Reuven. He comes home and tells his wife, he wouldn't believe it. I need to go to the big city. And I just found that Shimon's going to the big city, would you believe it, on that very day, by car, the same, but I can't believe the Siyat HaDishma, and then he quickly calls his neighbors, you wouldn't believe the Siyat HaDishma, and he called his friends in America, and his wife says, well, don't be so busy on the phone, keep your nose pressed to the window, the car could arrive at any moment, he's busy phoning and calling and telling. He's waiting and waiting and waiting, all of a sudden the car rolls down the road, parks outside his house, honks his horn. He says to his wife, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. What tremendous set of Ishmael. The cars come. Baruch Hashem, my ride has arrived. And he quickly calls up his children once again. In America, you wouldn't believe it. He didn't just promise he's coming, but he's actually come. He's outside my house and he knocks on the neighbor's door and you wouldn't believe it. And he's so busy telling everybody about it. And the car eventually rolls off. And he's missed his ride forever. I can hear Matityahu's words until this very day, still ringing in my ears. If he said in Yiddish, Rabbi Yisai said to us Bochrim, midaf chapen the moment. Even if you don't speak Yiddish, you can appreciate the phrase. You have to grab the moment. You hear the car honk, you can hear the horns, what do you do? Tell people about it? Or do you actually go downstairs and climb in that car and make sure you don't miss the opportunity? Midaf chapen the moment, he used to tell us. You have to grab the moment, because otherwise it comes and it goes. Everybody has this shoachas. But yesh koine elome. Only few and far between actually do something about it. So maybe just to finish off with a essentially tragic story, really. A story I once heard, a story with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as we know, grew up in Shari Chesed in Yerushalayim. His father was one of the Goinim, one of the Gedolei Hadoi, Reb Chaim Leib Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. On one occasion, this Reb Chaim Leib Auerbach was requested, would you be willing to house a few Chilonim, there's some irreligious immigrants from out the country, would you be willing to house them for a Shabbos? Host them? So Reb Chaim Leib said, of course, it would be my greatest pleasure, but on one condition. I don't want there to be Chilul Shabbos in my home. Not in my home. I can't possibly bear the thought that there should be Chilul Shabbos in my home. So if you just tell them they're more than welcome to stay and eat, and no problem, but no Chilul Shabbos. Fine, no problem. The guests arrive, and would you believe it, Friday night, one of them takes a match, strikes a match, and lights the candle. Chaim Leib was distraught. Chilul Shabbos in my home, I can't believe it. And he was so upset, he said, I can't talk to him. He asked his son, Shlomo Zalman, the great of Shlomo Zalman, to be. He says, you have a good way with people. Could you speak to him? I said, well, what's going on in here? We agreed, no Chilul Shabbos. So Shlomo Zalman went to speak to this guest, and he says, we requested there should be no Chilul Shabbos in our home. He says, sure, for sure, I would never be Machal Shabbos in your home. He says, you just lit the candle. He says, what, that's Chilul Shabbos? I didn't know. Oh, I'm so apologetic. I would never have lit a candle. I didn't know lighting a candle is Chilul Shabbos. Shazam was thinking to himself, you didn't know that lighting a candle is Chilul Shabbos? Our 3-year-old kids wouldn't turn on the light. How far removed can you be from Torah or mitzvahs? We were told that he was religious, but that ignorance, how could it be? What's your story? What's your background? She says, I'll tell you. He says, in the First World War, I was a soldier fighting in the army. And I found myself in the trenches. And he says, conditions there in the trenches were indescribable. People were literally scrabbling for life. And when people scrabble for life, they don't behave like human beings. There was no middos, there was no manners, there was no hygiene. People were acting literally like animals. Just to survive. Just for the sake of survival. We were living like animals. That was our life then. And he said, I noticed that the only soldiers in our trench where you could see there was a vestige, a semblance of humanity, were the Jewish soldiers. They were the only ones who seemed in this Gehenna on earth to be able to retain some semblance of humanity, some type of dignity. We're human beings after all. He said, I was so moved. And then all of a sudden he said, I remembered that my mother told me that I'm Jewish. He says, we kept nothing at home. I didn't even know what it means to be Jewish. I knew there's some sort of Torah, there's lots of laws, I have no idea about any of them. But I figured to myself, you know, if this is the way that Jews can act, even in this Gehenna, they manage just to be dignified, decent human beings, maybe that's something that I would like to aspire to be like. And he said, at that moment, he said, I looked up to heaven, and I said, if there's a God up there, show me a sign. Show me a sign. And if you show me some sign, that's it. I'm going to give up everything I have, and as soon as I can get out, I'm going to move to Eretz Yisrael and become a religious Jew. He told Rav Shlomo Zalman, I haven't finished the sentence when a shell dropped into our trench. And my trigger finger became terribly injured. I was examined by a doctor and they told me, you're useless in this trench, you can't fire a gun anymore. That's it, you're released from army service. At that moment, Etz Ba'alei Kim, we mentioned before, this was it. He said, I couldn't believe it. I asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a sign, with a millisecond, I'm suddenly released from the army in a miraculous chain of events. He said, I decided in that moment, that's it, I'm telling my whole life about it. I'm going to leave, I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael. He says, the truth of the matter is, but I was actually, at the time, I was in the middle of a university course and I was studying agricultural science. It was a 3-year course and I'd done 2 years. And all of a sudden I thought to myself, one moment, do you know how useful it would be? Imagine if I just stay here for one more year and I finish the course and I'll become an expert in agricultural science and I'll move to Eretz Yisrael. How useful, what a useful tool that will be. I've heard that they really need this type of expertise and I could contribute so much. With my expertise in agricultural science, I could help them develop the land. So I decided, of course I'm going to move to Eretz Yisrael, but not quite now. I told Rav Shlomo Zalman so movingly. So what happened to me? I went back to university and I got reunited with all my old friends, Jews and non-Jews, but none of them had any shayfas, the Torah or mitzvahs. And everything was long forgotten. The whole episode in the trenches was forgotten. My promise was forgotten. Everything was forgotten. And he said so movingly, that's why I've come to your house. And I didn't even know that turning on a candle on Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach told his great brother-in-law, Rav Sholem Shvadron, who was also a son-in-law of Rav Chaim Leib Auerbach, he said, you're a magid, you tell stories, tell this story. It's a mitzvah to fast in this story. You see what happens, a person can be inspired. A person can literally see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He asked for a sign, he received it on the spot. And what happened to him? Nothing. He had the Shor Achas, but he wasn't Koyin Olamai. And Chaim Shmulevitz always used to say, it's true, as Chazal say, the Shifcha, the lowly maidservant, what she saw at Kriyas Yamsuf was greater than every Novi. And he always used to add, and what became of her? Nothing. She remained a shifcha. That was a story that Rav Shlomo Zalman requested of his brother, Rav Shom Shadron, to be mefarsim. A person can speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and receive a sign at that very second. That's his Shor Achas. But if you don't convert it, if it doesn't become concretized into something real, if it's not Miyad Chozar Lilmoid, then it doesn't matter however much you are inspired. You can see Kriyas Yamsuf in front of your nose, Zeh Keli Va'anveyu, and yet it could be followed up by Milchemes Amolik. That's what Yisrael realized. Yisrael realized it's not good enough to be inspired. Inspiration evaporates. Inspiration disappears in moments. The fact that Kriyas Yamsuf could be followed by Milchemes Amolik, not only Tochen, the Milchemes Amolik, that was his reminder. If you don't act upon inspiration, you end up like a monk. So we really suggested over here, one in the name of the Maral, and one in the name of Eliel Yopian, two approaches to understand this Rashi. The Maral, Kedarku Bakredesh, a Ashkafic approach. Kriyas Yamsuf HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated his dominion over Koichos Ha'oretz. Milchemes Amolek, by stopping the sun, over the Koichos HaShomayim. That way, Yisroel knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was greater b'shamayim nimal v'al'oretz mitochas. The Lilyopian, the Musa approach, said he was inspired after Kriyas Yamsuf, but he didn't do anything about it. Then he suddenly saw Milchemes Amolek. Wow, Amolek were also inspired. How could they have the audacity to fight war against Klal Yisrael? The answer is because they didn't act upon their inspiration, so nothing came of it. At that point, Mash, Mua, Shama, Uba. If you want to know not just what he heard, but what made him come, Kriyas Yamsuf, that could be followed by Milchemes Amolek. Those are the lessons of this Rashi, and as Rama Tzion taught us, and as I said, I hear the word still ringing in my ears, Midaf happen the moment. Midaf happen the moment. Akiva. Yesh, Kaina, Oilomai, Bashor, Achas.